We're having a special class about the tribulations of the tshuva process. Ordinarily, I don't forgo our parsha class tonight for almost anything, for the simple reason that when else are we going to learn Parshas Pinchas? But the Bein HaZmanim is coming up, the break is coming up, and these are things that I think we have to come to terms with. They're concepts that are easily heard and understood and difficult to inculcate. You know, in theory, everything's easy. You'll notice on Sunday we had a special class about the tshuva process, and now Thursday we're having, Wednesday we're having another special class. These classes are reactionary classes. There's a reaction to things I'm hearing, which caused me to realize that it's very, very important to address these points. Sometimes I take these points for granted, and then I tell myself, wait a second, I shouldn't be taking them for granted. Just because I said them 10 times doesn't mean you heard them ever. So this is really a class that's meant to encapsulize points which you might have heard in other classes, but I think they're points that are worth putting together in one class. And I want to begin with some quotable quotes that I heard recently, and I think that these are quotes that maybe some people say and other people think and other people feel, and other people won't admit that they think or feel. So let me just quote the quotes, and then I want to react to them. So quote number one. Sometimes I don't want to be religious. Quote number two. Sometimes I want to be with a woman. Quote number three. Sometimes I just want to make money. Quote number four. Sometimes I think the Torah is boring. Quote number five. I'm coming with a lot of baggage, and I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to move forward from this point. Quote number six. Sometimes I think I just want to marry because I want to be with a woman. Quote number seven, and maybe this is the pivotal one. Sometimes I ask myself, am I fooling myself? Is this for real? Quote number eight. I want to be strong religiously for my family. I don't want to waver back and forth. Quote number nine. I'm lazy, and it's hard to change. And quote number 10 is maybe the most phenomenal quote, because it's a marvelous thought, and it's marvelous how guys here can really resonate with this thought. I don't think in any other yeshiva people would say this, but this is a quote that if I haven't heard it 50 times, well, every guy or almost every guy in Mechon Mir has thought it. I could be a good soldier. I'm very motivated to be a good soldier. I don't know if I could be a good Jew. It's much easier being a Zionist than fighting in the army. And when I walked into Mechon Meir, that's where I was headed. And now suddenly I discovered there's this whole Torah thing here, which sounds right to me, but isn't so easy for me. And being a good soldier would be much easier, and maybe I should go down that route. And this is the quote, by the way, that made me decide to have this class. Because every quote over here, I've heard almost once a week. But this quote, I haven't heard, and I know that it's a thought that has led many people to leave Mechon Meir without a yarmulke into the army. And it's a conflict which really I never took on head on. Meaning every other point in these quotes we've discussed at different times in different classes. This one, I never thought of addressing head on. And this one, I said to myself, wait a second, this is really a good point. I mean, these are all quotes I received, and again, they're not from one person, they're from many people. And like I said at the beginning, if every person here hasn't said it, they've thought it. And if they haven't thought it, it's because they're not willing to think it. But deep down inside, every person at some level is going to have some of these conflicts. And then we go on to really what we might call branches of the original question of is this for real? And that is being religious what I really want? Is it really me? There are a few more, but I don't want to go into them right now. So I want to begin with quote number one, which amazes me. You know, people often tell me, sometimes I don't want to be religious. And what I think you have to know is that I applaud you that sometimes you do. I don't think that you can say it's natural to want to be religious. You know, if a person says, sometimes I don't want to be religious, so I say, good for you. I'm happy it's only sometimes. If you told me I never want to be religious, I'd understand you. A guy once came to Rav Nebenzal, who was a disciple, like the top disciple of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He's the chief rabbi of the Jewish quarter today. And said to him, Rabbi, I don't enjoy learning Talmud. And Rav Nebenzal said, how many years are you studying Talmud? He said, 2. So the rabbi, should I continue studying Talmud? So Rav Nebenzal is quoted as having said, I wasn't there, but he's quoted as having said, I studied 20 years and I didn't enjoy learning Talmud. So when a person says, sometimes I don't want to be religious, I think that's the most natural and honest thing a person can say. There's nothing wrong with that. At least the person's being honest. You know, when a person's kidding himself and saying, I want to do this every day, what's going to be when he wakes up one morning and realizes he doesn't? It's true. It's normal not to. What is the whole book of Mishlei all about? It's about the fact that there is a constant desire within the human being to have instant gratification. As Rav Saadia Gaon writes in his introduction to Mishlei, all of Mishlei can be summed up as the challenge between will I get instant gratification or long-term gratification. The Torah trains us for long-term gratification. And our natural tendency is to want short-term gratification. And if you want, that thought is really encapsulated in the first story of the Torah. Adam is told, you are not allowed to eat from that fruit. And God didn't mean you will never be allowed to eat from that fruit. God meant in a few hours you will make kiddush over that wine in honor of Shabbos. But Adam doesn't wait. He grabs the grapes, and Eve grabs the grapes, and they're eating the forbidden fruit. Had they waited a few more hours, they would have made kiddush and sanctified the day of Shabbos over that wine. But no. So that's our tendency. We want to pick the fruits now. And it's normal. And religious life trains you that you can't. You want something good, it takes investment, it takes long term, it takes time. And the natural tendency is that no one wants that. Every human being wants it now, wants to enjoy now. And if you tell a guy, the Gemara says, you come to a guy in jail, and you tell him tomorrow we'll take you out of jail, and we'll give you a lot of money. The guy says, don't do me any favors, let me out now. But tomorrow you'll be rich. And he says, that's okay, just let me out now. The Gemara says that's normal. That's what any normal person would say. And it's the same thing with regards to religious life. We look at religious life and intellectually we say, that makes sense. I think that's the type of life I would like to lead. And then we suddenly have to face up to the challenge of the restrictions of religious life and the day-to-day difficulties of religious life. And the normal human being will have many moments where he doesn't feel like doing it. You guys remember the story about the tefillin? The kid who left his tefillin at home? Eitan remembers the story. I said it like 2-3 weeks ago, right? We have to sometimes, what?
The one where he sells his tefillin?
No.
Oh, it's not 4 weeks ago.
No. Okay, in a nutshell, a kid is like 15 years old and he forgets his tefillin at home and he doesn't want to tell anyone, and his mother comes to him and says, you know, your brother's just told you forgot your tefillin at home. And he says, no, I'm sure I have it here somewhere. And she says, no, they say it's at home, go check. And then he says, okay, Mom, I'll put on tefillin when we get home in a week. And his mother says to him, no. Right now, maybe you don't care if you put on tefillin or not. But in the long run, your whole life, you will know that you missed the day of putting on tefillin. And if you put it on now, I know you don't care now. But keep it up, and later on you'll decide. And to an extent, sometimes, especially in these weak moments, a person has to try and be consistent. He has to be mind over matter. You know, and that was part of maybe one of the most important messages of our class on Sunday. That one of maybe the greatest accomplishment that you guys can have is consistency. You don't necessarily have to grow from where you are. If you can maintain consistency, you've done a lot. If you could keep keeping Shabbos for the rest of your life, that's a huge accomplishment. Bezat Shem, all of you will, but you should know it's not going to be easy. For some of you it will be easier, for some of you it will be harder. If you enter an environment that is supportive of it, it will be easier. If you don't, it will be harder. Now that doesn't mean you won't have hardships. It's not easy. And each person has his challenge. For one guy, Shabbos isn't the problem, but Kashrus is a problem. For another guy, Kashrus isn't the problem, but women is a problem. Each guy has his challenges, and no one knows, you know, that it doesn't matter what the specific challenge is. At the end of the day, religious life is not easy. And those people who will come and sell you a load of goods, just adopt the religious life, everything will be perfect and beautiful and easy. I'm telling you, it's the good life. In the long run, it is the good life, but in the short run, it's the hard life. And to consistently maintain perspective on the long run, that's not easy. So the guy says, sometimes I just want to be with women. And again, my reaction is, if it's just sometimes, I have to wonder. You know, the Gemara says, no human being, the Gemara says, crosses a day without having an improper thought about women. No human being, that's the Gemara. Certain things a person is never saved from, never passes a day that he's saved from. One of them is an improper thought. The Rambam says that the desire that prevents non-Jews from becoming Jewish and non-religious from becoming religious in our day and age, the desire that stands in the way of recognition of God is the desire for women. That's what the Rambam says. He says all the other philosophies, everything else is just a cover-up. Deep down inside, that's the drive. So if there's one challenge that we're going to face in leading a religious life, it's this. Because that's what we saw last week in Chassidut, those of you who will remember. Deep down inside, it's in our blood to have emunah. So then how is the emunah challenged if it's so natural to us? So we saw in the Rebbe of Slonim, he explained last week that it's through attacking Kedusha. Kedusha is much harder for us to be spiritual, to lead spiritually correct lives. That is much, much, much more difficult for us, but they're intertwined. And if one falters, then the other falters as well. So if we have a tendency to be weak in this, and all human beings do, we have to know that it's normal. And it goes hand in hand with the previous question. It goes hand in hand. Now, I'm not giving solutions yet. My point is first to recognize that all of these are normalcies. This is normal. And it's par for the course. Sometimes I just want to make money. Same reaction. If it's only sometimes, that's very good. So, point number one is that all of these are things to deal with throughout life. And the question is, so how do we deal with them? First of all, the mere recognition that it's normal is a good step. You know, the recognition that everyone around me is contending with the same thing, whether they'll admit it or not, that's a positive step. I'm not alone in this battle. The thought of long term, that's also a good step. Another step that's very helpful is davening. A person that has true davening in his day also has a true connection to Ribbono Shel Olam in his day. When people come to me and tell me they're going into the army, what should they do to prepare? One of the things I tell every guy is work on your tefillah. If you have those moments in the day where you can really talk to Hashem, you're a different person. It's interesting. There was a holy Jew, a Rishon, named Rabbi Lezer Rokach. And he wrote 8 steps to Yiras Shemayim. 8 steps to being a God-fearing person. You know what step number one was? Honor your parents. Kaved es avicha ve'es imecha. He has 8 steps. It's just interesting. The fact that a person sometimes finds Torah boring, well, that's normal. At different stages of our life, different aspects of Torah will talk to us. And a person has to know that Torah is multifaceted. There are midrashim, there's Jewish history, there's Mishnah, there's halacha, there are stories, there are a lot of things. And you have to find the areas of Torah that speak to you at a specific time in life. Sometimes a person is too wiped to delve into something. He needs a good story of Rav Nachman. Sometimes the story of Rav Nachman is too long. He needs a good dove's minute. You know, 1 minute, give me a message and let me go to sleep. There are different times that different things speak to us, and that's normal. We have different stages in our lives. But a person should always try to find the point of connection. And again, it doesn't have to be long, but there should be a point of connection. What about our baggage? You know, every one of us is coming with baggage. I want to get back to that point. When a person says, you know, I feel like I just want to get married because I have a desire for women, that person's being honest. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, everyone knows, why does everyone get married? Just for that. So you could be at ease, guys. If that's why you want to get married, that's perfect. That's perfectly okay. The Gemara says, we don't talk about it. It's immodest. But the truth is that, so if a person says that, he shouldn't feel bad about that. There's this misconception. I should want to get married for all kinds of lofty ideals. Good for you, you have lofty ideals. Yes, they're also a part of marriage. You should want to build a home for lofty ideals. It should be part of the picture. But if the prime part of the picture is that you're a normal human being who has normal desires and therefore you want to get married, so you can applaud yourself. You're a normal human being. Mazal tov, it's a good thing. Very good. That's a very positive thing. Gemara says there was once the rabbis in the beginning of the Second Temple, they did away with the desire for idol worship. They saw it was going so good. They said, okay, so let's do away with the desire for women, for illicit relationships. So they did all their Kabbalistic things. No desire for women. Next morning, no chickens, laid eggs. No one got married. The world didn't produce. The world came to a standstill. They said, whoa, we can't do this. No, okay, God, give it back. So they went back, did some more Kabbalistic things, brought back the desire for women. But the Gemara says they put on eyeshadow. They tilted it a little bit. They made the desire for one's own relations weaker. That's why in our generations, normal people don't have a desire for their sister, for their mother. You know, these are things that a normal person doesn't have because they changed it. That was a change that the men of the Great Assembly did. When they reinstituted the desire for women, they changed it a little bit. Okay, so... So this is a point I really regret in the last years I haven't addressed, because so many people come with this question that I have to deal with these points like in one class, because so many people feel guilty that they want to get married because they have a desire to be with a woman. Well, guys, good morning. That's normal. That's what it should be. We talk about lofty ideals. Yeah, that should be part of the picture. And you don't get married and come overtly to a date and say, you know, all I'm interested in is this, let me just check out the looks, because that's really all that matters. No, that's not all that matters. Obviously, there's so much more that matters. And obviously, we're trying to build a tremendous home, and we're trying to build a house for the Shekhinah, and we do talk about lofty ideals, and they're for real. But the fact that what's underlying all of this is a certain desire that God built into us, well, that's life. Yeah, that's the way we are. That's the way we all are. And that's normal. That's why I don't like shadchanim who get upset when guys ask about the looks of a girl. I don't believe in talking about the looks of a girl either as a shadchan. But I understand the guys that ask. And there are some shadchanim who say, if you're a yeshiva bachur, what are you doing talking about that? I don't know what they want from the guy. You know, that's normal. The Gemara says you have to see a girl to see what she looks like, right? Obviously, so that's part of life. No one's saying she has to be a beauty queen. Different people have different standards. Okay. But the question is legitimate. And now for the biggie. Maybe I'm fooling myself. Is this for real? Now that's a question which you can ask yourself from today until the day you die, or you could not ask yourself. And part of the question is, how do you decide if something's for real? Let me ask you another question. I think almost every guy sitting in this room is a diehard Zionist who would go to the front lines shooting an Uzi. I hear guys talking, when a guy goes into the army, they ask him, how many Arabs did you kill? I don't talk that way, but I hear guys here talking that way. Guys come to me and ask me, which battalion can I join where I'll really be doing something? And I say, what's called really be doing something? You know, like kill a few terrorists. Okay, fine. I mean, that's what I hear. It's not what, not the way I talk, but that's what I hear. So let me ask you, did you ever ask yourself, is that for real? Because for some reason, that's a given. Why? So I want to challenge the givens in your life. I want to ask you, think to the things that you do feel comfortable with and ask yourself, why do I feel comfortable with them? And here, I'll tell you a formula. It's a very dangerous formula. But I think it's a true formula. Most of us make most of our decisions in life based on emotion. And after we've decided, we rationalize with intellect, with logic. But our decisions stem from our emotion. How many times do guys come with the same question? I'm dating a girl, and logic says she's the perfect wife, and everything's right, but it doesn't feel right. And then you have guys who come and say, I'm madly in love with this girl, and it doesn't make sense, but I'm madly in love with her. And I know already that I could talk to them from today until tomorrow, they're going to marry the girl. There's nothing to talk about. You know, you could sit down and rationalize with them. I was stupid enough to do this once. I sat with a guy and he said, he gave me all the reasons why it didn't make sense. I'm Shomer Torah Mitzvah, she's not Shomer Negiah. I want to keep all the mitzvahs, and she's like, maybe some, you know, we'll figure it out. And at the end, I say, I don't understand. How do you think this is going to work? So we sat there, and we analyzed it together. And after a few hours, it came to the conclusion, this isn't going to work, right? Excellent. 2 days later, they were engaged. Okay, fine. Go figure. Yeah, because we our emotions are the ones that our emotions govern. We rationalize. So each of us on a different level. So if that's the case, then how does one develop to a point where leading a religious life feels like it's for real? Part of the answer is, I'm going to give a few suggestions. Some of the answers I can't tell you, because if I tell them to you, they will sound fake. As you live them, you will experience them. There are a few answers to this question. I can't say all of them. In hindsight, you will look back in 10 years and maybe you'll have better answers for yourself. But I think that comfort in anything comes with familiarity. And that's one of the reasons why we encourage guys to wait a little bit before they date. A guy that comes to Mechon Meir and he's Shomer Shabbat for a whole year, that's very nice. At what comfort level are you with the observance of Torah and Mitzvot? How long have you been at the level you're at? So people will say, I'm very consistent. And our encouragement is, take the time to reach a certain comfort level. Take the time to be at a point where you don't feel this question, is this for real? It's a normal question. It's a correct question if you're honest with yourself. And it goes hand in hand with the question, is being religious what I really want? It's a real question. It's a question that people will sometimes word it, is being religious really me? So let me tell you guys. You have a person who keeps saying, I'm skinny and I'm fit and I'm in shape. And he keeps eating Doritos in between breakfast and lunch and supper. And potato chips and snacks. And he goes from 120 kilo to 140 kilo to 200 kilo. And he keeps telling you how he's skinny and fit and everything's good. And then one day, he finally does make it to the gym. And he takes off his t-shirt and he's standing in front of the mirror. And he says, oh my God. He's looking at the mirror and he's saying, what is this, the funny house? And they said, no, that's a normal mirror. And he's shocked. He looks at the mirror and he looks at himself and he can't see his feet anymore. And he's standing there looking back and forth and him in the mirror and him in the mirror and back and forth. Now that person is going to stand there looking at the mirror for a while, unless he's going to run and hide his face, right? He might not look at the mirror. But at some point he's going to stand there looking at the mirror and he's going to ask, is that really me? Now you tell me, how long is that question going to last for? He's going to have two choices in his life. Either he's going to come to terms with the fact that that's him, you know, he's now he's this size, or else he's going to make a change because he's decided who he wants to be.
Or so he
could live in denial, right? That's true. He could. I meant a productive individual, right? You're right. Person could live in denial. So that's a small external physical example. Yeah, he could also commit suicide. You know, that's also an option. He could end it, and then it's not him, right? There are all kinds of options, right? That there are abnormal options, and we're dealing with normal options. So that's an external, simple example. But in truth, in life, that's a choice we have to make. Either we get comfortable with who we are, or we make a change and we define who we are. In Judaism, we're big believers in the capacity of a person to define who he is. So a person is born and they have a question whether his great-great-great-grandmother, they have questions about her gear. They have a question how his mother got pregnant. They shtup them outside with the sheep, they keep them out of the house. And every time they're learning Torah in the house and he tries to pipe up, they say, quiet, you bastard. You go deal with the sheep. And every time they deride him. And he decides, I'm not like that. That's not what I am. And he keeps davening. And he composes beautiful tefillot. And he becomes David, the king of Israel. Evin Masu Abonim, the stone that all the builders mocked. No one thought you could build anything with this kid. No one thought he would amount to anything. His father was a big Talmid Chacham. His brothers were big Talmidei Chachamim. Every time they learned Torah and he tried to stick in a word, they'd shoo him away. Go deal with the sheep, David. But he didn't give up on himself. He decided who he would be. And we're big believers in that. We're big believers that you can define who you are. We're not kidding ourselves. We're not saying if you decide now, that's it. You know, some people decide, I'm going to be Rav Eliashiv. Next morning, they walk in here, they've shaved their heads, they try to pull out their forelocks as much as they can, they buy this big black hat, they wear a long big black coat, and they start answering everyone's halachic questions. And then if they're really good, then they've already have a beard, and some newcomer at the Machon Meir believes they are Rav Eliashiv, and then they start developing a following. It doesn't work that way. We're not kidding ourselves. It takes time to build who you are. But you can define who you are. And it takes time. And the question, am I fooling myself, is this for real, is a question that you have to decide on. And this is maybe one of the big points why I want to discuss this now. Because as we enter the Bein HaZmanim break, you guys are going to have contact with your parents, your siblings, your friends, and they will all be telling you that you're kidding yourself. It's the opium of the masses. Get real. We know your baggage. We know who you really are. And we have to remember that our past only defines our past. Our past does not have to define our future. It is in our hands to define our future. A fool lets his past define his future. An intelligent person seizes the moment and says, I can try and fix the past, but I could definitely fix the future. That's in your hands. I'm not telling you to define yourself in any specific way. Obviously, I believe that what's right is orthodoxy. But that's not my point. My point is that you shouldn't allow other people to put doubt into your definition of who you want to be. Think about it and be prepared for the challenges that await you. Because throughout your life, there will be people who challenge you. It will be in the workplace. It will be in the family. It will be with your friends. People will challenge who you are. They will challenge the authenticity of it. They will challenge the validity of it. And they will challenge whether you really believe it or not. Now, it's an evolvement process. Obviously, as time goes on, as a person is consistent over time, his comfort level goes up. His confidence goes up. There's a point which I'm struggling with myself whether to say or not. From the minute I decided to have this class, I'm at odds with myself whether to say it or not. And I think I'm going to say it because you're mature adults. But it's like a very risky sentence to say. And I want you to take it with this clause in advance of saying it, that you guys really have to think about this sentence, because this sentence can be tremendously misapplied. It can be misapplied to the point where a person can destroy their own lives. And that's why I am uncertain as to whether to say the sentence or not, but with this clause, I'm willing to say it. So remember, you have to really think about this before you apply it, because it has its limitations. And now the sentence, right? Part of what really defines who we are is the sacrifices and the decisions that we really make based upon the decision of who we are. Meaning, we sometimes make decisions, I am A or B or C. A person decides he is keeping Shabbos. And then he's faced with the challenge that Shabbos just settled in. He heard the stock market plummeted. He knows if he just turns on that computer for a second and sells the stock, he can cut his losses in half, and if he doesn't, he might be out who knows how much. And now he's standing there with a big challenge before him. When he makes that decision, I am not turning on the computer, and I will not put in that order, and I will leave it, and whatever happens, happens, because I'm a Shabbos observer, he becomes a different person. Now, he might look back and say, I was so stupid, I can't believe I did that. But if he can really come to terms with the sacrifices he makes for his decisions, then that is one way to acquire those decisions. Now, the reason this is a dangerous sentence is because if you make a sacrifice that you're not ready to make, then it can backfire. If you're at a point where, like, this is the first Shabbat you're keeping, and afterwards you spend the rest of your life kicking yourself and saying, I'm never going to do that again, then you didn't win anything, right? So it's a dangerous sentence. And that's why it's up to you to think about how to apply it. And that's why I kept deliberating whether to say it or not, but it's up to you to know how to apply the sentence. But at the end of the day, you have to know that at some point you will reach a point where you have to say, do I put my money where my mouth is? And part of that question is, how comfortable am I with where my mouth is? Will I be able to stand up with the results of putting my money where my mouth is? The next quote, people say I'm lazy. I don't buy that. I don't know any guy here that's lazy. I think the more accurate description is that it is so hard to change. And it is so hard to be consistent in change. And I think you guys have to give yourself a break. You can't use that term. It's not true. The reason we don't have tests in Machon Meir is because the difficulties and the hardships and the accomplishments cannot be measured by a test. It's not a question of have you mastered the laws of Shabbos. When you have a guy coming from an Orthodox background entering an Orthodox yeshiva and you teach him the laws of Shabbos, then all you want to know is how much do you understand the laws of Shabbos. When you're entering Machon Meir and you have to change your lives and suddenly start observing Shabbos, then the challenges are very different and they cannot be measured by a test. And it's not right for any person to say he's lazy. Can we all be more efficient? Maybe. Usually. Does that mean we should be hard on ourselves? No. We should think how we can make tomorrow better. If you ask yourself why you could be a good soldier, it's because you believe in it. You've connected to it. You probably grew up with it, and you're motivated to do it. It's something that's already, you're all turned on for it. And you think about it. You say, look at how many Jews are being killed. Look at how Jews are being endangered. Look at the value of what I'm doing. Look at the value of what I'm doing. Look at how important it is. Part of the keys to remaining observant is realizing the value of what you're doing. Realizing that each one of you is important to the Ribbon Shel Olam. And that the Ribbon Shel Olam is looking at every one of you. And you can't kid yourself and say, there are enough Jews in Israel, there are enough Jews keeping Torah and mitzvahs. What difference does it make what I do? That's a farce. Every one of you is important. And your decisions are important. And if God in his infinite wisdom, after creating a whole universe and all the galaxies in the world, and creating this tremendous world, says there's hashgacha pratit. He's looking at each of us, and he's gauging each of us, and he listens to each of our tefillot. So then each of us is important. And we have to remember that. Like we discussed in our Sunday class. Einenu gadol b'bayit hazeh mimeni. There's no one more important than me. And in life, you have to remember that. Don't belittle yourselves. That's a game. It's a cop-out. To tell yourself, what difference does it make if I don't keep Shabbos this week? Oh, it makes a big difference. Chazal said, every time we're faced with a challenge, we have to view the world as standing on a scale. And the world is exactly balanced. And you have a choice. Are you going to tilt that scale to the right or to the left? Will the whole world be more chayav or more zakai? Will the world be with more merits or more demerits? Chazal weren't talking only to Rabbi Akiva. They were talking to me and you and every one of us. Is being religious what I really want? Well, maybe in the long term it's what you really want. And in the short term, sometimes you will and sometimes you won't. And that's normal. But the term, is it really what I want? I think deep down inside it's what everyone really wants. But our desires for the here and now are also very real. Is it really me? So that's part of the defining of am I fooling myself? It's the same question. But that's something which you have to define yourself with time. People sometimes say, you know, if I wear a kippah, then I feel more obligated. Is that like a cop-out? Then it's not really me. I don't think so. You know, in halacha we always say, don't put yourself in trying situations and try to use tools to help yourself stay in line. If two people are standing on guard duty in the army and the reason is that each one will keep the other one awake, does that mean that being on guard duty is less important to them? No. It means that the normal human being, when he's standing on guard duty at 4 o'clock in the morning after he's been up doing all kinds of rigorous exercises, is going to fall asleep. And this is a good tool to keep us awake. Well, sometimes we use external tools. One of those external tools is wearing a yarmulke. What's a yarmulke? To remind me, I should be a God-fearing person. People are looking at me. They see I'm a religious Jew. Different people have different tools that help them. For one person, growing a beard helps them. For another person, wearing a ring that shows he's married helps him stay away from girls. I've encouraged many people to wear rings. When guys tell me that they're faced with all kinds of challenges in the army or in the workplace or other places, I tell them, wear a ring and the girls will know you're married. They'll stay away from you. Don't invite challenge. We daven every day that Hashem should save us from challenges, because who knows if they'll stand up to it. And if we could use a tool to avoid it, then that's great. Now, a while ago, a guy told me a very difficult line, and I think maybe now's the time to address it. A guy said, I wouldn't want to marry someone like myself. That reminds me of a line that someone used to say, I wouldn't want to join a club that would have me as a member. I don't know who the quote is from. I don't know who that is. Okay. I think that someone like myself. So I think that this type of sentence stems from a certain strength that all of you share, and that is the strength of introspection. When a person can truly analyze himself and say, well, I should be different, then he reaches Machon Meir. That's what led you guys here. But that same strength of being able to look inside and saying, things have to be different, this isn't right and this isn't good enough, can sometimes turn into a weakness. When a person keeps looking inside and says, I'm still not perfect and I'm still not perfect and I'm not yet balanced enough and I'm not yet strong enough, it might be accurate, but it is only a good tool when it drives us forward. We have to realize that life is a work in progress. We have to attain a certain comfort level before it's right to date. We have to be at a certain comfort level. You can't marry and then wake up one morning and say, honey, it's been nice, but I decided this just isn't me. You can't do that. And if there's any thought that you might be holding where that's what you're going to do, don't date. It's not right. It's not moral. But once you've reached a certain comfort level, the fact that we'd like to be at a better place and we realize our shortcomings, so we have to use that to grow. Remember, no one was born perfect, and every one of you has made a tremendous journey. I refer you to Sunday's class. The fact that we have weaknesses is normal. The fact that we have to overcome them, with time, either we will or we won't. But to say I wouldn't want to marry someone like myself, I don't know. I'm not sure that's true. I think that a person is focusing on their shortcomings when they say a line like that, and a person shouldn't do that. You want a true picture, look at both sides of the picture. And the fact that you're coming into marriage with baggage, okay, well, how much is that baggage affecting where you are in life? If right now it's weighing you down, so you have to think how to overcome it. You have to think how to advance. The more time you spend doing something, the more you become comfortable with it. And depending on what the baggage is, a person has to think, and sometimes it helps to think with other people, how he's going to leave that baggage behind. Some forms of baggage go with us for life. And then it's just a question of how to avoid letting them hinder us. They shouldn't stunt our growth completely. They shouldn't prevent us from getting married altogether. Some baggage is just a matter of learning to live with it. And some baggage can be overcome. Not every form of baggage should stand in the way of getting married. You know, a guy who's been to prison 25 times is not going to change that history that he has. And we've had students here who were in prison many times and got married after that. We had guys here who used to be drug dealers and got over that and got married and built beautiful families. We had guys here who used to be professional thieves. We had guys here who used to be professional criminals in the mob. You name it, it's that type of person has been sitting here. And again, the key point is that our past cannot define our future. We can try to rectify our past, but we definitely can build a different future. And we're not allowed to bind ourselves to our past. I was once walking in Mea Sharm, which was Chol HaMoed, Sukkot, I think, either Sukkot or Pesach. And this big Russian fellow walks over to me. And I whisper to my wife, I bet he's going to ask for a donation. And I saw he was going to start a conversation, and I knew where it was headed. So he walks over to me, and he says, how do you know there's a God? Okay. So I answered him whatever I answered him. And I was sure that this is all a lead-in. Like, I was like basically telling my wife, keep an eye on the wallet, keep an eye on the carriage, keep an eye on... I didn't think the guy was for real. And the guy's talking to me with tears in his eyes. And I was sure he was a fake. Like, I'm telling you, I told my wife, like, I whispered to her, just keep an eye on our stuff as he's talking to me. He shouldn't, like, slip something away. And then the guy tells me, how do you know? Is God willing, not how do you know, is God willing to forgive a person for his past? So I said, yes. So he says to me, whatever he did, now I don't know who I'm talking to. So I said, yes. So he said to me, how do you know? And I don't want to answer that question. I want to leave you with that question. Maybe I should. You guys don't seem like you have the answer, but it seems like an obvious answer to me. What's the alternative? What are you going to say the alternative is? That God says, if you stole in your past, that's it. You have no future now by me. Can that be a fair world? Remember, our sages teach us that when Hashem came to create the world, Hashem said, I want to create a world with justice. It didn't last. Second time, it didn't last. Time after time, it didn't last until the angels came and said to Hashem, you got to begin with mercy. You got to begin with the concept of tshuva. Before Hashem could create the world, before there was a human being, before there was the first sin, there was a concept that the world cannot last without the concept of tshuva. So that means that intrinsic in this world is that we won't always be up on top, right? We're going to fall. And intrinsic to the world is the concept of tshuva. There is no world without tshuva. And if you think about it philosophically, it's a very good and powerful point, because without it, what hope are you giving? You know, if you don't give the person the capacity to do tshuva, you're basically signing him into a life of crime. You're telling him, no coming back, that's it. Now just be a criminal, because you have nothing better to do. It's not like you can rectify your past. So, in a nutshell, what we discussed tonight, to summarize what we said. If a person says he sometimes doesn't want to be religious, that's normal. I mean, I don't know if it's normal to say sometimes, but I guess sometimes you will want to be religious and sometimes you won't. That's normal. Sometimes you just want to be with women, that's also normal. Sometimes you just want to make money, that's normal. Remember of Sadigon and Akdama to Mishle. All of Torah is about long-term pleasure versus short-term. The short-term will always attract us, and it's a matter of training ourselves and working to grow within it. Is the Torah sometimes boring? Yes, it's a question of where you connect the Torah. Find the Torah that you connect to. Here in Machon Meir is a time for growth, so it's worth investing in Torah that is not so attractive to you. Learning Gemara even if it's hard for you. Learning Chumash even if that's not what you connect to right now. You try to know everything, but at the end of the day, you also have to find Torah that you enjoy and that you connect to. The baggage is something that can be overcome on different levels. We don't have to take it with us our whole lives. Some that we will have to take with us our whole lives, but that shouldn't limit us. The past does not define our future. The fact that a person only wants to marry because he has a desire to be with someone of the opposite gender, that's normal, as we discussed. Chazal say that's by every person. If a person asks himself if he's fooling himself and is this for real, so that we discussed at length, that over time it becomes for real, and we define what's real, and we have to come to terms with it. It's a growing process. It takes time. It takes time within a certain environment, and the environment we choose to a great extent will affect us, and that's the norm. Every person is affected by their environment. When a person says he's lazy, we said that's not true. None of you guys are lazy. The fact is, it's hard to change, and consistency is what's important, and that's hard too. We discussed the motivation to be a good soldier, and we discussed the question: is it really me? And that's your definition. You will define that for yourselves. In every aspect of life, you can ask that: is being married really me? Is being a father really me? Maybe I should walk out on the family. Is this really me? You know, the kids are driving me crazy. I wake up in the morning, my 2-year-old's poking her finger into my eyes. I go out of the room, my 4-year-old had an accident and there's all over the floor. I try to go to the bathroom and my 6-year-old is sitting there and he says, how much are you going to pay me to let me in? Is this really me? Is this life? Come on. Is this me? I don't understand. At every point in your life, you can ask that question. It's up to you to decide if you're going to be consistent, come to logical decisions. Remember that we usually decide based on our emotion and rationalize with our thought. And we have to A, think this out, and B, try to connect emotionally. Go to Shabbosos which you connect to. Go to things that will affect you emotionally. If it's learning Chassidut, if it's learning stories, don't just connect intellectually. It's not enough. Remember the story about the guy who was dating the girl. It didn't make any sense, but they're married today. I hope they're happy. They broke contact with me, which is understandable. I have no complaints. I'd rather not be a part of that chillin'. That's okay. But that's the way we all are. And the fact that external things affect us, that wearing a kippah helps us stay in line, that's normal. It's a good thing. And if anyone says, I wouldn't want to marry someone like myself, I would stop and rethink that. Reanalyze who you really are. Start recognizing all the positive that's within you and think, I think that each of you should want to marry someone like yourself. I'm not saying you should look for someone like yourselves, but I think you all have so many positive points. You'd be very lucky if you met someone with all these positive points. I think you have to develop a more perspective self, a more positive self-image, and also if there are things that bother you about yourself, so think about how to overcome them. Most people spend most of their life having points about themselves that they never overcome and they don't like about themselves. And I'll tell you a point from our Binyan HaBayit class. A key point in marriage that most people don't know, and you could point your wives to the last minute of this class, a key point in marriage that most people don't know is that within marriage, every person wants their spouse to like them where they don't like themselves. Every one of us has areas about ourselves that we don't like. And one of the things that we're searching for within a marriage is a spouse that will like us specifically where we don't like ourselves. So it's normal if we have areas that we don't like about ourselves. We can work on them. You could recognize that most of the world comes to Rosh Hashanah every year of their life, after a certain age, with the same challenges, making the same New Year's declarations, and knowing full well that they won't stand up to them this year. So we have to be more realistic and smarter than that. Rosh Hashanah is just around the corner. How are we going to change that? We shouldn't be that way. We should stop and say, okay, what is it that I don't like about myself? How am I going to change it? And really conquer those points and change them. Okay, we went well over time. Let's go.